Reading this morning is taken from Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 through 4. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. You may be seated.
Appreciate all the men who've led us in worship. Appreciate all of you for being here, and we're thankful that we have the opportunity to worship such a great God. Today, we have our annual Trunk or Treat and Chili Supper, and we hope that you'll be a part of that, and that will begin tonight at 5, and Chili Supper afterwards, and so that's always a great fellowship opportunity. And then Saturday night, we have our men's night. I hope our men and young men and boys can participate in that with a meal at 6. And then Gary Knuckles speaking at 7, and so we are looking forward to that. Please sign up so we can get a number for the meal. So we have a lot of good things going on with our church family here this week. We invite you to turn. We've been looking in our His Word at the book of Hebrews. And both lessons today are going to be coming from Hebrews. So I invite you to turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Where we're going to focus in on this concept of growing weary. When I was thinking about illustrating that and thinking about as Christians us marching forward in a Christian army, thinking about the real army marching. If you've ever gone to a Civil War battlefield or studied much about the Civil War, you'll know that they'll talk about when the army had to march. And a great hindrance to some of the generals' planning, and actually it often led to who won the battle or not, whether an army could march and get there. Others who were coming to reinforce an army could make it in time to participate in the battle. Sometimes these men carrying large packs, anywhere from 40 to 60 pounds of weight, and oftentimes they had heavy uniforms on, very dusty or very muddy roads, trying to walk. Now imagine walking at a pretty fast march, would be about 20 to 25 miles a day if they were really in a hurry, and then being often expected to join the fight when you got to your destination. As one writer said, who was a journalist at that time traveling with some of the armies, that a march was one of the most dreaded things by the average soldier. And there's no wonder that there were so many stragglers or people that fell behind and lost connection with the army because they could not keep up, because they grew weary from the march. I think you would grow weary too. I think we all would. It would be very difficult to be in that situation, to have to march. And I think that's similar to what the Hebrew writer is talking about in Hebrews chapter 12, verse number 3. And he's talking about these Christians who are growing weary. And he says to them in verse 3, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. The Hebrew writer is talking about Christian soldiers. He's talking about people that are growing weary of the march. They're getting tired of having to march, and they're thinking about stopping the race. They're becoming faint-hearted. When I thought about this illustration in marching, it reminded me of what is an illegal hazing routine I've heard about on some college campuses that sororities got in trouble over, is where they would make a new recruit go through a line of people, and there would be people on both sides who would be hitting that new recruit. And that initially, I think, might have begun with like pillows and something soft, but it often turned into something very violent where people would be hitting them, and people became hurt over those things. I thought about from the story Unbroken about Louis Zamperini, who one time when he was in a prisoner of war camp, they made his fellow comrades come up and hit him, and he began taking the punishment because of some things that had gone on and the hatred that the evil Japanese person had for him. And he was hit numerous times. And as he staggered trying to stand, he couldn't hardly take it anymore. He grew weary. I think sometimes as Christians, we feel like that. It's like we're running through a line of things and people are just hitting us on every side. It's like we're an army marching forward and Satan just keeps making all these blows at us. And like that Civil War army, we grow weary. And then what happens is we get to the battle, we get to the fight, and we don't have any energy to fight. We don't have any enthusiasm for the fight. And we're faint-hearted. We're faint-hearted. And that's what the Hebrew writer is talking about. And this often happens to leading Christians, to the most involved Christians, to what you might consider to be the mature Christian. It doesn't just happen to the new Christian. Yes, it happens to the new Christian, and they get a little weary after they have become a Christian with having to go to church, and they get worn down, and they think, I don't really have the fire I used to have, and they drop off. But it also happens to Christians who've been a Christian for 30 years, 40 years. It happens to your church leaders. It happens to all of us. We can grow weary. So let me say from this passage that weariness is expected. Anybody that's going to be marching, anybody that's going to run a race, you're going to get tired. Everybody gets tired when they're running a race. When you think about the Bible, the children of Israel, they grew weary, didn't they? They grew weary when they were in the wilderness for 40 years. When you think about Moses, he grew weary of the children of Israel and all their complaining. He got so weary one time that when God had told him to speak to the rock, he was frustrated and he hit the rock because of his weariness. Jeremiah grew weary. The weeping prophet got weary. He said that I don't want to preach anymore. I'm tired of preaching. But he said there is this fire in my bones that I can't withhold it in anymore. Jeremiah got weary. Jesus got weary. Jesus did. He got physically tired at times, and he got weary with the disciples. He said, how long am I going to bear with you? Will I really find faith on the earth? Those were questions he asked. Why? Because he was weary. He's like you disciples. I keep telling you the same thing over and over, and I'm still struggling to get you to have faith. And even as he was betrayed, they all fled. When you think about Paul, Paul got weary at times. In fact, he says in Galatians chapter 6, verse 9, let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. Weariness is expected. We're going to have weariness on the journey. If you could take off on a trip, and you're going to be going on a long trip, you understand that somewhere along that trip, you're probably going to get a little tired. You're traveling an 8-10 hour journey, you know that's going to be a part of that journey, is you're going to get a little tired of riding in the car. You expect that. You know it's going to happen. Weariness is to be expected, but listen to me. It should not be accepted. We cannot be comfortable with weariness. Weariness can lead to laziness, and laziness can lead to apathy. Weariness can lead to you just not caring anymore. Weariness must not be accepted because weariness, in the book of Hebrews, can cause you to quit, to turn back, in their case, to Judaism, to quit following Jesus. And the writer is concerned that they may stop. And so weariness is expected, but weariness must be overcome. And it can be overcome. And there's at least three things that I want to notice from this passage. There could be more, I'm sure, but we're going to notice three of ways that we can overcome weariness in Hebrews chapter 12, because we must continue to fight the fight against weariness. We cannot leave the army. You know, when the Civil War soldiers would be in march, you could straggle behind and you could fall behind. But if you left the army and ran in and started hiding out in a farmhand's house and got in the cellar and was hiding from the army, If they caught you, you were not considered a straggler. You were considered a deserter. You had quit. You had no longer continued on the march to the battle. You weren't just straggling behind. You didn't just sit down and get you a drink and take you a little bit to eat to refresh yourself so you could continue the march. You deserted. You know what they started doing to deserters? They started shooting them. They had harsh punishments for deserters. Folks, we need to remember in our army that Satan wants us to go from straggling to deserting. He wants us to quit so he can shoot us, so he can harm us, so he can cause us to lose our salvation. You see, there's a difference in straggling in the army and quitting the army. Satan wants us to quit the army. He wants us to be so wearied that we quit. And so notice some things that we should see from this passage is that we must run with endurance. Look at verse 1. Since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Let us run with endurance. That is, this is not a sprint. He's saying to these Hebrew Christians, if you thought this was going to be a quick thing, that you were just going to follow Jesus and everything was going to go well and it wasn't going to be any problems and you were just going to be an easy run, an easy race, we might say. He says, no, this is a race that requires endurance. This is a race that requires long suffering. This is a marathon, not a sprint. We must take a long distance perspective. You know, you have to know how far the race is. No one enters a race without knowing the distance of the race. If you're a runner, you know and want to know how far the race is. Because if it's a 1 mile race, you're going to run a lot different than if it is a 13.1 mile or 26.2 mile race. It's a big difference. You're going to pace yourself. The Bible says we've got to run with endurance. We got to understand that we got to have a long distance perspective, that we must grow and develop along the journey. We must pace ourselves. In verse 4, he says we must be tough and keep our race in perspective. He says, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility. In verse 3, now look at verse 4. For in your struggles against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood. He says that, keep this in perspective, brethren. There's many people who have shed blood because of their faith. And he says to the Hebrew brethren, you haven't yet gone that far. You have not had such a weariness that you've been persecuted and given your life for the race. You know, when you think about these Civil War soldiers who were marching, and they would be tempted, of course, to fall back. They would be tempted to desert. They're tempted to not keep marching on. But if you know that your comrades, your brothers, are up there fighting, and they're depending upon you to march ahead and to get there to help them, and you know that many of them have died for the cause you're fighting for, then that spurs you on. That gives you an excitement to continue to march forward. A motivation that you're not going to quit. Why? Because there's some people who have resisted, who have gone so far as to shed their blood. You keep it in perspective. You see, we realize that there's a lot of other Christians who have gone through a lot more than what you've gone through. You may be wearied from the journey, but I guarantee you can find someone else who's enduring more and who has kept the faith and can be an inspiration to you. That you have not gone through anything that other people aren't going through or haven't gone through as well. You see, run with endurance. Keep a long-term perspective, the writer says. But secondly, from this passage, we should note that we should run with others. Notice how he uses the plural all throughout this section. He speaks of running, or let us, in verse number 1. He speaks of, let us run with endurance. And he talks about us all throughout it. Now, when you think about this concept, it is right the opposite of what I could call the Elijah complex back in 1 Kings 19, where Elijah had stood up to the 400 prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel in chapter 18. And he thought he had won a great battle. And he had won a tremendous battle. But then in chapter 19, he discovers that wicked Jezebel is still after him. And he discovers that she and Ahab, her husband, are trying to kill him. And so he goes out and he sits underneath a broom tree, verse 4, and he asks that he might die. He's so discouraged. He's so weary. He says, oh Lord, take away my life, for I'm no better than my fathers. He lay down and he slept under the broom tree. And the Lord's going to come to him and is going to give him a message of inspiration. And he says to him, arise and eat, verse 7, for the journey is too great for you. He arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights. You see, he was weary, and the Lord said, you need to eat. You need to do what you, the basic things to keep yourself going. And then he says this, down in verses 9 and following. He says, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant. They've thrown down your altars and killed the prophets with the sword. And I alone am left. They seek my life to take it. Elijah thought he was the only one. He says, I'm the only one that's left, Lord. And notice what the Lord said. The Lord is going to remind him when he comes to him in this still, small voice, verse number 18, that there are 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal and every mouth that has not kissed him. Elijah thought he was the only one. And God reminds him, Elijah, eat some food. Quit being so depressed and telling yourself you're ready to die. Eat some food. And remember, there are 7,000 other people who have not bowed the knee to Baal. You're not the only one, Elijah. We got to run with others. If you go back to Hebrews chapter 12, you realize that we're not in this race alone. He talks about let us, but if you notice, he makes a list of people that are for us. In verse number 1, we have a great cloud of witnesses. The great cloud of witnesses are like those in an arena. This is the departed faithful. This is those who have gone on before. This is, if you will, those who are in heaven. Those who I talked about last week, who have left us a legacy. They are our witnesses. They're cheering us on. They're encouraging us. They're in the stands. We're running the race, but they're in the stands cheering us on. But then he talks not only about this great cloud of witnesses, but he talks about the idea of running together and let us run. And then down in verse 12 and 13 of chapter 12, he says this, therefore, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Now, that's a quote, and at first it might be a little confusing for you, but let me explain it. It's a quote, the first part, verse 12, is from Isaiah 35, and the second part is from Proverbs chapter 4 in verse number 13. And the concept from these passages is of one runner preparing the path for the next runner. That is, he's moving the obstacles. He's moving the rocks out of the way. He's saying in this context, lift up your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees. He's saying, stop and help those whose hands are drooping. Stop and help those whose knees are weak. And he says, make straight paths for your feet. The concept is, those who are struggling, you stop and help them. And there's the path that is crooked. He says, straighten out the path. You prepare the way for them. And you remove all the obstacles. And then he says, quoting here from Proverbs, he says, what is lame may be put out of joint, but rather be healed. And the concept here is that if someone has a part of their body that has become dislocated, it is causing them to be lame. They can no longer walk on their legs. He says, the idea is you help them. You put your arm around them and you walk with them so that they can cross the finish line too. He said, don't leave them behind and run on. But he says, move all the obstacles out of the way and put your arm around them so that now they have two good legs to help continue on that journey. You see, we're not in the race alone. Later on in verse 22 and 23, he talks about the idea that we have the assembly of the firstborn who is enrolled in heaven. We have the church, all who is enrolled in heaven who are with us. You see, we're not running alone. We have the entire church. There is a great corporate or congregational or fellow mutual responsibility displayed in Hebrews. If you think back in this great book, and if you go back to chapter 3, verse number 13, you see this same concept here. He says, exhort one another every day. Exhort one another. If you go ahead to chapter 4, verse number 1, he says, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it. He said, let us worry about one another. Let us fear lest somebody drops off and doesn't reach the destination. In chapter 6, verse 11, he says, and we desire each of you to show the same earnestness, to have the full assurance of hope unto the end. In other words, we're in this together. We're running the race together. And thus, when he comes to chapter 12, he talks about it in a plural way. And he talks about it in the sense of, let's all help one another and make each other's path straight and move out the boulders and help each other. When I was thinking about illustrating this, I ran across this sculpture that has become very significant to some of our Marines. And this sculpture was a recent sculpture that was made and put in two places where Marine soldiers are housed when they have been injured and hurt in Camp Lejeune and another place in Camp Pendleton in California. And this depicts a scene from the hard Fallujah fighting in Iraq in 2004. And it's when Sergeant Bradley Casil was being carried out of the house by his two fellow Marines. And he was had lost so much blood. He was very weak. He could not move himself because he had been shot and had a lot of shrapnel in his legs and was losing a lot of blood. And they go in and they're retrieving him and bringing him out. And this illustrates this concept that the Marines live by, that no man is left behind. That if we have to, we'll carry you out because we're in this together. And they have erected two of these statues, these sculptures, that have become known as the No Man Left Behind, because there's no national memorial for our men and women who fought in Iraq. These have kind of become that. And it says that many of the Marines or others who are retiring or are stopping their service, getting out of the armed services, they have finished their tour of duty, are often receiving their papers, they're often having that closing ceremony at these monuments. Because to them, and for many of the men who are at that point in their life, they had an experience like this. They could not have made it to that point of retirement. They could not have made it to that point of being able to go back to their friends and family if it had not have been for their brothers who carried them somewhat along the way. when they were weary, when they were tired, when they were losing blood, their brothers were there to pick them up and carry them to safety. And at the close of their service, they're using these monuments to honor their fellow man who helped get them to that point. Now, that's the way it is in the Christian life. When we get to the end of our life and we receive that crown of life, that joy in heaven, we need to realize that none of us are going to do that on our own. We're going to do that because other people have helped carry us at times along the journey. They've picked us up. When our legs were lame and we couldn't walk, when our hands were drooping and our knees were feeble, they were there for us. You see, we need to be reminded that no man should be left behind. Weariness can be overcome because we run with endurance. We run with others. But finally, in Hebrews chapter 12, we run by focusing on Jesus. Probably the most important point I should be saying, and thus I saved it to last, and that is that in this context, it's very clear that we run by focusing on Jesus. Look at verse number 2. Looking or focusing, the idea is steady your eyes upon. You keep your focus there. Looking to Jesus, the founder and the perfecter of our faith. When you watch the Olympics and you watch the 100 meter or 200 meter dash and you watch guys like Usain Bolt and those guys go at it, it's, you know, the guy Usain Bolt could do it because he was so awesome. But the idea is you're supposed to just run straight ahead and not look to the side. You just focus on the target line, because if you're, there's, you know, all these studies have done, if you look to the side and you look back in any, it takes hundreds or slight seconds off of your time. And so you focus ahead. Usain Bolt could often be so far out in front of everybody, he could look back. But that's what this passage is saying. It's saying focus on the finish line. Focus on Jesus. Because if you start looking around at everything else, your eyes are off Jesus. You know, when we think about our life, we can focus on ourselves. We can become very introspective and think about our own lives and the problems we have and the challenges we have. We can look at our world. We can look at our nation. We can look at the church. We can look at all these kinds of things that have problems. And they certainly do have many problems. It's easy for us to become distracted and to focus on all these things. But in this context, and what the Bible says overall, is that don't focus on those things, because they're just going to wear you out more. They're going to get you more weary. But focus, looking to Jesus. He's the founder. He is the perfecter of your faith. Look at verse 3. Consider Him. Consider Jesus is the idea, who endured from sinners such hostility against Himself. Think about what all He endured and His weariness and how He continued to go on. Look at verse 24. He brings us back to Jesus. And to Jesus, focusing on Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant. And finally, in chapter 13, verse number 8, He says, in a reminding way, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Jesus is not going to change. You can focus on Jesus when you became a Christian. You can focus on Jesus now, and you can focus on Jesus 10 years from now. He's the same. The world will change. People will change. You are going to change. But Jesus will be there for you. He's not going to change. Focus on Jesus. And so weariness can be overcome. You've got to run with endurance. You've got to remember you're running with others. Can't do it all on your own. And you've got to run by focusing on Jesus. Growing weary, it's something that should be expected, but it is something that we can overcome. You know, there's a famous story about how the marathon distance was invented. Came about because there was a runner in ancient times who ran that distance to deliver a message, and at the end of that distance, he gave the message and exhausted himself so much in the carrying out of that message that he then died and that he was running in that to marathon, and that's where the name comes from and all those things. And I always use that as a great incentive that we shouldn't be running marathons. But I think there's another lesson there. That is, sometimes I think, we think, you know what, we got to maintain all our strength. But the idea is that in this book of Hebrews, it's saying you're going to be wearied at times. But don't quit running. Run by focusing on Jesus. Run by realizing other people are with you. And run by realizing it's a long race. And let me say this. Ideally, we would run the hardest and the best and put it all out there. So at the end of our life, we fall exhausted into the arms of Jesus, knowing that we've left everything here for His glory and for His honor, and worn ourselves out, as the old men used to pray, wearing ourselves out in His service. If you need to give your life to Christ, if you want to put Christ on in baptism or rededicate your life, please come as together we stand and sing.
All to Jesus I